Welcome back to the deep dive.
Okay, so have you ever like walked into a room and you can just feel it, you know? Like someone's in trouble and everyone's kind of tiptoeing around, like trying not to make eye contact.
Oh yeah, totally. It's like that awkward silence after someone spills their drink at a party. You can just sense the blame radiating outwards.
Yeah, that's exactly what we're diving into today.
Hit me with it. What are we unpacking this time?
Well, we're tackling chapter two of Unraveling the Fabric of Fear, and the title itself, The Blame Cycle, already has me hooked. It just feels so relatable, right?
Absolutely. Like,
Yeah.
we all instinctively know what that means. Like, we've all been there on one side of the equation or the other.
Exactly. And maybe we should quickly recap where we've been just to set the stage.
Good idea. So, way back in the preface, chapter zero, remember we talked about that energy spectrum?
Love and curiosity at one end.
Fear at the other, and that kind of neutral zone of ignorance or apathy in the middle,
Yeah.
all behavior driven by these flows.
And then last time in chapter one, Living in the Now, we explored how fear often pops up when our expectations aren't met.
Yeah, leading to frustration, even anger, which is, well, quite different from our sort of default state of curiosity, that natural drive to figure things out.
So that brings us to today. Our mission, if you like, is to really unpack this whole blame cycle.
Yeah, figure out how it works, where it comes from, those roots in fear, and crucially, how we might actually, break free from it.
The text really stresses how important understanding this is for, well, getting along better, for social harmony.
Absolutely, it's fundamental.
And this section starts with a really thought-provoking proverb. Those who blame others misunderstand.
Those who blame themselves partially understand. Those who blame no one understand perfectly.
Yeah, it sets a high bar.
It really does. It suggests perfect understanding lies beyond blame altogether.
Right. Okay, so basics first. Blame. What are we actually talking about here?
Well, the chapter defines it pretty clearly. Seeing someone else as responsible for something bad happening, something negative.
And it lists related terms too, like condemn.
Right, which is like strong disapproval, assigning guilt. Then you've got persecutor, the one causing harm.
And savior, the rescuer. And of course, forgive.
Which is key, letting go of that anger, pardoning someone. It sets up the whole dynamic.
What I found really interesting was the central idea here that these problematic behaviors we see.
Conditioning, really. Stuff shaped by our life experiences. They're learned patterns, conditioned by experiences in a world that's, frankly, complex and messy. John Elder, Jody Holland, Jacques Fresco, they touch on this. Society isn't exactly neat.
So understanding comes from knowing both sides.
Kind of. Knowing what compassion feels like and what happens when it's absent.
And the text even brings in some research suggesting we start out psychologically clean, you know, wired for empathy.
It says that from the time we're babies, we're constantly picking up on these thought patterns, like what gets rewarded, what gets punished. And that shapes our whole understanding of how the world works. And unfortunately, sometimes that leads us down the path of thinking that blame is the answer.
So we're basically little sponges soaking up all these reactions and behaviors from the people around us.
Exactly. It's a constant process of observing and learning.
Tell me more about this blame cycle thing.
Well, it starts with this idea of seeing yourself as a victim. And then the chapter goes on to talk about this concept of victimhood as a choice. And this is where it gets really interesting.
Yeah, this is where it starts to challenge our assumptions a bit. Jody Holland's point really hits here. You're not a victim of circumstances unless you choose to see yourself that way.
Right. Making that choice, identifying as the victim, that's what invites blame. It keeps you chained to the cycle. But if you can avoid placing blame,
You can step back.
you can step back and start to see the chain of cause and effect more clearly, why things happened, not just who did what to whom.
But it's careful not to dismiss real harm, right?
Oh, absolutely not. It's not saying bad things don't happen. It's more about the power we have and how we choose to identify with those experiences afterwards. Do we let blame define us?
Because if we do, the chapter says directing that blame just creates more victims. It sounds like a chain reaction.
Yeah, think about it. If someone feels blamed, what's the natural reaction?
Defensiveness.
Right, rooted in fear, like we talked about.
So they push back.
Exactly. And that pushback can easily become blaming the first person, or maybe someone else entirely. So the blamed becomes the blamer.
Ah, creating a new victim. And round it goes.
That's the engine of the cycle right there.
Okay, so Fred acts as the persecutor towards Bob. Bob feels like the victim.
Simple enough. But then Bob reacts. He condemns Fred for his actions. Now, in that moment, Bob has become the persecutor.
And Fred feels like the victim.
Exactly. So Fred, now feeling victimized, condemns Bob back. Ping pong. Blame, victimhood, blame, victimhood. It just keeps going back and forth.
It really shows how blame just flips the roles. Okay, then it gets more complex with Sally, the savior.
What? Right, the victim, persecutor, savior cycle.
How does adding a savior, even with good intentions, keep the cycle going?
So, same start. Fred persecutes Bob. Bob's the victim. Sally sees this, wants to help, so she jumps in.
The savior.
Right. But how does she save Bob? Often by condemning Fred. How could you do that to Bob?
Ah, okay. So now Fred feels attacked by Sally.
Exactly. From Fred's point of view, Sally's now the persecutor, making him feel like the victim.
And then someone else might jump in to save Fred from Sally.
Precisely. Maybe Bob, maybe someone else, feels Sally was too harsh, so they condemn her. Now Sally's the victim, the new person is the persecutor. You see.
Wow. So even trying to help, if it involves blame and condemnation, just rearranges the players on the board. It doesn't actually solve the underlying issue.
That's the point the text makes. The negative energy, the blame, just gets passed around. It doesn't disappear.
Okay, that's a lot to chew on. So it's this reactive loop. And it's everywhere, right? We see these dynamics playing out all the time in families and workplaces and broader societal conflicts. And here's where it ties back to that core concept. From the preface, remember that spectrum of love and fear.
Right.
So the chapter states that the opposite of blame, which is rooted in fear, is forgiveness, which aligns with love and curiosity. And this is huge. Forgiveness is the opposite of blame. A blame cycle can only be broken by forgiveness.
Wow. That's pretty strong wording.
So if I want to break free from this blame cycle, I need to stop seeing myself as a victim. Yeah.
So are they saying it's less about the other person and more about us changing our internal state?
Exactly. Okay. It's about recognizing that, you know, holding on to anger and resentment, ultimately, it hurts us more than it hurts the person we blame. It keeps us stuck in the past. It prevents us from moving forward. And it can even impact our physical and mental health.
And it even flags up chapter 3. Owning ego, the fine art of forgiveness, as the place we'll really dive into how to do that.
So choosing forgiveness isn't just like a nice thing to do. It's the actual mechanism for stopping this negative cycle.
That's the argument. It's the intervention.
Now, so why do we even fall into this victim trap in the first place? Like, what's the appeal?
Well, the chapter suggests it can be a way of getting attention, or maybe love, or even help. It's like an unconscious way of signaling that we need something. Maybe even seeking forgiveness from others indirectly. Kind of like saying, look, I'm suffering here. I can't handle this alone.
But importantly, choosing not to be a victim, choosing forgiveness, it doesn't mean pretending the bad stuff didn't happen.
No, not at all. The text calls it acknowledging the untidy process of growth. I like that phrase.
Me too. Untidy.
It means recognizing we learn from everything, even the really hard stuff, but without letting those experiences trap us in a powerless identity.
And that quote is powerful. None of us are victims of our circumstances unless we choose to be.
Right. And the chapter really emphasizes that the choice to identify as a victim is what fuels the blame and keeps the cycle spinning.
So stepping out of blame allows for what?
A clearer view.
Yeah, a clearer understanding of cause and effect, really, why people act the way they do. You move beyond just assigning fault and start looking at the actual dynamics at play.
But I'm still a little curious about something.
Yep.
If we're talking about breaking free from blame, you know, does that mean that we should never hold anyone accountable for their actions?
That is where things get really nuanced. And sometimes I think true forgiveness can actually make real accountability even possible.
How so?
Well, think about it. When we're just consumed by anger and resentment, it's really hard to see things clearly, right?
Yeah.
And to approach the situation with any sort of compassion.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But when we let go of some of that negativity, it creates space for us to respond in a more constructive way.
So I might choose to hold the person accountable, or I might just focus on my own healing and growth. The point is, I'm making the decision from a place of strength, not just reacting out of anger or hurt.
Exactly. That's powerful stuff, right?
It is. It is.
Now, the chapter shifts gears a bit and brings in religious perspectives. It's not about making the book religious, but showing these psychological insights aren't brand new. They predate modern scientific methods.
It points out that historically, spiritual leaders were often the ones trying to understand and guide human behavior, fulfilling a role maybe similar to scientists or psychologists today in some ways.
It's about recognizing a continuity of human understanding.
Exactly. These are timeless questions about the human condition. how we relate to each other, how we handle conflict and suffering.
It shows how different belief systems have, in their own ways, grappled with this movement away from blame. So Christianity puts a huge emphasis on forgiveness, compassion. Forgive and you will be forgiven, or be kind, forgiving each other. That clearly aligns with moving towards blaming no one.
Makes sense.
Then in Islam, there's similar stress on pardoning others, controlling anger, being merciful. Again, it's about shifting away from that condemning stance.
Okay.
Buddhism points to ignorance, misunderstanding, essentially as a root cause of suffering. It emphasizes compassion, non-hatred. That links directly to the misunderstanding part of the proverb when blaming others.
Right. Blaming comes from not seeing clearly. And Hinduism talks about freedom from hatred, anger, and also letting go of ego, that sense of I and my in suffering. Detaching the ego helps move beyond assigning personal blame.
So less ego, less need to blame.
That's the idea. And it even mentions other spiritual paths, like the Law of One, talking about forgiveness, stopping karma, the wheel of action, and seeing separation or judgment as a negative path.
So across the board, despite different specifics, there's this recurring theme. Blame is limited, perhaps stems from misunderstanding or ego, and the higher path involves forgiveness and understanding.
That's a good summary of how the chapter presents it, a common thread woven through diverse traditions.
Okay, so wrapping this all up, the big message from this deep dive into the blame cycle seems to be, it's learned, it's tied to fear.
And the way out is a conscious choice. Forgiveness, understanding. It's active, not passive.
And recognizing the cycle is the first step, right? Just seeing it operate.
Absolutely essential. You can't change a pattern you're not aware of.
But true growth, true liberation, only comes when we're willing to be honest with ourselves about our part in things.
And that honesty, that self-awareness, paves the way for forgiveness, doesn't it?
It does.
Not just of others, but also of ourselves.
Exactly. It's about recognizing that we're all imperfect beings.
Right.
You know, we all make mistakes. It's about letting go of the need to be right, the need to punish.
Right.
And embracing a more compassionate understanding of ourselves and others.
Well said.
So for you listening, maybe take a moment to reflect. Are you pointing fingers? Even at yourself?
Yeah. And consider this. What might shift if you consciously tried to bring in more curiosity instead, trying to understand the why behind the behavior rather than just assigning fault? And what about forgiveness?
How might that change the dynamic? It's a challenging question.
It really is.
Trading in those blame grenades for empathy fireworks.
And that sounds way more fun, right?
Totally. And I think that's a great place to leave our listeners today. Understanding the blame cycle gives you the power to choose differently. It's like having a map to navigate that blamey terrain and avoid those emotional pitfalls. And even when you stumble, because let's be real, we all do, you can always choose to get back on the path of forgiveness. It might not be easy, but it's definitely worth it.
And here's a final thought to ponder. If these problematic behaviors are learned, not innate, what responsibility does that place on us?
Responsibility to do what?
To actively create environments in our families, workplaces, communities that actually foster compassion and understanding from the start. Environments that might, you know, short circuit the blame cycle before it even begins.
Wow. That's a big question about prevention, not just cure. Really something to think about.
Definitely food for thought.
Well, we encourage you to explore these ideas more in unraveling the fabric of fear itself, and check out the resources over at catharticcuriosity.com. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. And until next time, stay curious, stay compassionate, and maybe leave those blame throwers at home.